Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Chris Buccanani. Chris, it's been a couple weeks. How are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. It's good to be back.
Always great to have you on. And you know what? In the couple weeks you were away, probably the biggest development in Penn State football is we got naming rights for the field. Now, I brought up before that this show we are going to talk about your top 10 most important players. Mm-hmm. We will get there.
Yeah.
But first, I just wanted to get your initial reaction. West Shore home field at Beaver Stadium.
Okay, so here are my initial reactions. Just personally, as a fan, I hate that college football is in this place where we are selling naming rights to college football stadiums. I'm not saying it's the worst thing in the world. This is not some great evil that's entered into the universe or anything. I just don't like it. I liked it better before we were at this spot. I'm going to like it at least to some degree less now that we are in it, and it's only going to get more and more like this. So personally, I don't love it. That said, those are massive forces, Jim, that are way out of my control, our control, Penn State's control. And so from that perspective, once Penn State committed to $700 million to massively overhaul Beaver Stadium, this was an inevitability. I think it is cool that it's a Penn State alum who started their own company and it became successful enough that they're in a position to be able to commit $50 million to acquire these naming rights. And they didn't take James Beaver's name off the stadium, and everybody's still going to call it Beaver Stadium in the same way that I still call like the Buffalo Bills Stadium Rich Stadium, and it's changed name like 75 times. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I'm glad Penn State's getting the money. I am very happy that it's a Penn State alum and a Penn State alum owned company and not like Pepsi or something or Microsoft. So that's where it's at. I personally don't love it, but I consider it a minor annoyance. And I expect that by the time the season rolls around, we'll all have forgotten all of this and stop talking about it. But I know there's one thing I didn't mention, so go ahead and ask.
Okay. Well, first, I'll react to your reaction, which is the naming of the field versus the naming of the stadium. One thing to point out is probably the naming of the field is not worth as much as the naming of the stadium.
Sure.
And I really – Beaver Stadium is just one of those things that – it's just has always been that way in my lifetime. Never thought of it as any, it's like grabbing my tissue and calling it Kleenex. You know, it just, that's what it is.
Right.
So,
and let me just say for the record, I know probably, I imagine the majority of the listening audience doesn't know. They may not even know who the stadium's named after. So James Beaver, look him up. Pretty interesting dude. Unbelievably critical to the history of Penn State. Did a lot of important stuff for Center County, for the Commonwealth. He was a big governor. He was a war hero. And he stepped in. He was a president of our board of trustees and stepped into the presidency when George Atherton, who's probably one of the most important presidents in Penn State history, died in office. So if you go to Gate A, where the students go in, there's actually a rock with a plaque, which was a gift of the students at the time that James Beaver was president, that is signifying their gratitude to him for everything he did for them and for Penn State at a really difficult time. And, you know, I think about what it was like at a time to be at the university where the student body was still relatively small enough. I think we're talking like about 800 students max, like so at like a medium-sized high school, where if you were a student at Penn State, you probably personally knew the president of the university and vice versa. And that they were so struck by what he did for Penn State that they wanted to give that gift. So I think about that when I go by Gate A up at Beaver Stadium. And so to me, I'm glad that we're not so far gone that we're like, oh, but we could get more money if we named the stadium. So to hell with it, let's just scrap all of this. And again, PepsiCo Stadium in the middle of Happy Valley. So at least we haven't gone that far. Though, hell, I'm sure one day we probably will. We're not yet. I'm grateful for that.
The reality of sports is that it has changed, and sponsorship is part of it. I mean, pick the sport. Love baseball. Am I now upset because there's a logo on the uniforms?
Remember, there was gross.
But they haven't yet turned into IndyCar drivers, okay, or NASCAR drivers with head-to-toe sponsors on them. So will they be able to keep their self-control and not get to that point? Who knows? Now, you alluded to, you knew what I was going to ask, so here, yeah, I'll ask the obvious. And here's the controversy, and here's the reaction that I've been getting. You know, of course, there's been a push for it to be Paterno Field,
yes,
at Beaver Stadium. And the argument is, even if you want to talk dollars and cents, that, gee, this $50 million over 15 years, which actually has a net present value probably of less than $30 million. Some people look at it, if you're looking at it at a little better than $3 million a year, that's a fairly trivial amount when you look at the budget of what it takes to put out a big-time football team. Sure. The argument is, gee, I'll bet you if you named it Paterno Field, you could get commitments for a lot more money than what you got. Valid argument, Chris?
So maybe. I'm to be honest, I'm a little skeptical about that. In my long experience of raising money to benefit things at Penn State, and working in a business where I have to rely on some part to some extent on like the brand value of Penn State and the notion of reaching the Penn State audience to sell advertising and things. One of the things I have found is that our alumni base is great. I love Penn Staters. They're some of the best people on earth. People almost ritualistically overestimate how generous they are going to be with their money and how enamored other people are going to be with the notion of spending money to reach Penn Staters. So I'm not saying there's not money to be made, but I assure you there's less than you imagine there to be. So I'm not even sure this idea that you could raise more than $50 million by naming it Paterno Field is correct. But if nothing else, it's like, you know, you have a baseball card that somebody's like, well, you know, I'll give you $400 for that. It's like, well, I saw on the internet that it's worth $800. It's like, that's right. It might be in theory, but you've got to find the buyer who's willing to give you the $800 and go through all the rigmarole that surrounds it. Whereas this is cash in hand, $400. So yeah, maybe you could raise $50 million naming the field Paterno Field, but you would have to go out and find the donor, or more importantly, donors, plural, probably many of them, to make up or exceed that amount. Whereas here's the bird in the hand. It's $50 million and sign the paperwork. So you take all of the politics out of it. Just the logistics of having one donor who comes to you and says, here's 50 mil versus we're going to navigate this maze of trying to add all that up. That argument doesn't hold that much water for me. And I'm going to aggravate the Paterno crowd, I think, today. And that's unfortunate, because it's like, if you're listening, I'm on your side, but you know, the narcissism of small differences, there's probably going to be more acrimony inside the loosely held together alliance than you have with folks on the other side of the fence.
Well, a couple things on that, Chris. Number one, I think that there's another question beyond just would it raise more money if you called it Paterno Field. I'll get to that in a second. I think there's an argument to be made that a lot of people just do not want to deal with the Paterno issue.
Well, yeah, that's right. I said, just taking the politics out of it. That's the crux of it. That's the reality. And I'm just going to tell a hard truth right now. Since I've already pissed off the Paterno people, let me just go further. Sorry, I use the term Paterno people. Let me retract that. I hate that. That's a Dave Jones thing. That's a conversation for another time. Anyway, the folks who love Joe and rightly, in my mind, recognize and appreciate his voluminous contributions to Penn State University and Penn State football, and correctly believe that they ought to be better recognized than they are, and probably also correctly believe that this university in an official capacity ought to do the right thing and apologize to Sue Paterno while she's still with us. That's the good folks I'm talking about. Since I've already angered them, let me anger them some more. Yes, it's a thorny issue, and many of you who are at the tip of the spear on this thing, which I understand is a lonely and uncomfortable place to be, probably have made the situation worse because despite being well-intentioned, I think some of the ways you may have chosen to communicate your side of the issue may have actually made it worse than it was before. Like, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
And part of this, Chris, too, is I think a lot of the folks, if you go up the power structure at Penn State,
going to hear it about this. Sorry, go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
Well, you've got a head coach, an athletic director, a president of the university who, prior to them getting here, had no ties to this university.
Right.
So they had no ties to Joe Paterno. Yeah. And I think none of them want to have to live with the repercussions of honoring Joe Paterno, right or wrong.
Can we just make a promise right now, Jim? Because we got like a minute left in this segment. I'm thinking about this. Supposed to be like the 10 most important football players.
We can let it spill into the next segment. I've been known to do that.
Can we make a promise that you and I will do a show about this at some point during the offseason? Because I got a full hour on this. I don't have two more minutes. We could wrap it up in the next segment, but this is a really good topic, and I think we could have a good discussion about it. Let's just promise the listeners at some point before we get into 2025 fall previews, we're going to tackle this thing and really dig in.
Okay, that's fair enough. So I'll wrap up. My final thought is I think there's more to this discussion than just the amount of money, but I'd find it interesting if I'll use the expression, the Paterno people went out and said, okay, I could bring in X dollars, and actually got those kind of commitments.
Right. Yes.
Could you do that? And that could all lead into also, I believe, how the Board of Trustees acts on this kind of thing. Whatever the administration brings them, we just say yes. All right. As promised, we got 10 most important players for the 25 season, according to Chris Bucanani, when we get back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Chris Bucanani. I'm Jim Galante. And you know what, Chris? Our discussion between segments proved the point that we've got a full hour of discussion on the naming of the field and everything that goes along with it. So I'm very glad you pointed out. Another week, we'll do a full hour of that. But
yeah, that was like the old gag with the jar of peanuts. You open it up and all the springs pop out. Like, we opened way too big a can of worms to mix metaphors there. But the last point I'll make is just to say, you will not find anybody who is more comfortable just putting themselves out there in defense of Joe and his contributions to Penn State. I just think that there are probably some other ways that he could be recognized, and it might be just a little less fraught path than the Paterno Field one. And the other thing is, like, again, $700 million hole we got to fill, and there was $50 million. And so it's done. And, you know, it's to me just not worth causing further angst inside the Penn State community over. There are other ways to have that conversation, and we'll do it at some point.
That's what I was going to say. We'll produce the angst in a few weeks. We'll get to that. Let's get to our 10 most important players. And, Chris, the most important word is the word important.
Yeah.
I didn't use the word best player. Important.
Yep.
What does that mean? Well, it means that Nick Singleton is an incredible player, but if you lost Nick Singleton, you'd still have Catron Allen there.
Sure.
A pretty good option. If something happened to Drew Aller, you would throw in a quarterback with virtually zero experience.
Correct.
Compared to, say, like Bo Premula. So with that in mind, just to understand using the word important, let's get started with your top 10 list. Let's go with number 10 on your list, Chris.
Okay, so number 10 on my list, Jim, I have the sophomore tight end, Luke Reynolds. And to some extent, Luke is somewhat of a stand-in for the tight end position in general. And when I look at the wealth of talent Penn State has brought into that tight end room, it's really incredible. And so there are going to be multiple guys who contribute there. And I, for sure, we're probably fascinated by the high-profile recruit. And, you know, we're going to have two of those guys, two of those young tight ends, as well as some veterans who have been in the program. But when you look at what Luke contributed on the field last year, so he is totally a known commodity. And you've heard all the praise. You've got the evidence of your eyes from when he got in last year. I expect he is going to be a significant contributor and very possibly the number one option at the tight end spot. I also think he's, by virtue of his skill set and now the in-game experience he got, he's maybe the most valuable cog in Ty Howell's tight end machine there in this offense. And there's no question, even if we get the improvement at the receiver spot that we need, that the tight end spot is going to be absolutely critical. We saw what Drew Aller can accomplish last season with a tight end in this offense whom he loves throwing to. And so I thought about this list. I thought about who is a guy who, if he gets hurt, is going to be a critical loss to the team and we're going to struggle to replace. And so, yeah, we have a bunch of different guys who could step in and replace Luke Reynolds. And so that's why I'm kind of saying, to some extent, he's a proxy for the importance of the tight end spot in general. And I think in an ideal world, you want him to step up and live up to his billing to such an extent that he does rise to the top of a very competitive position group. And so that's why I have him there at number 10.
I think that's a great choice. And I also like that you talk that he's representing the tight end position, because I should make you aware, Andy, with his list, his number 10, he was talking the same way about the wide receiver position, but he just said the wide receiver position.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to step up there. Don't know who it's going to be, but it's someone there. I'm going to throw in my list as we go here. Sure. Also through this. I did the same kind of generic thing. My number 10 is the third linebacker.
Yeah.
After Tony Rojas and Dom DeLuca, who's going to be that guy that we think will step up? Is it Tamir Robinson? Is it Anthony Specka? Is it Keon Wiley? Who? But I think someone will. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, King had come back, I wouldn't have this, but I think because he left, who's that third guy? That's my number 10, the third guy.
I will say I like Specka quite a bit, although I am very intrigued with what Keon Wiley can bring if he can be healthy.
Yes, I remember when he first came to Penn State, his recruiting class, talking to some high school football people saying that they loved him. And yeah, what he was bringing to the table. And, you know, the other guy is Tamir Robinson, who we're hearing a lot of good things about also.
Yep.
Who was dinged up in his senior year in high school. So But I think there's somebody there who's got to step up. All right, Chris, that's number 10. How about we get to number 9?
Okay, so this one, again, you've got a player who to some extent is speaking to an entire position group. And I've got a defensive tackle, Alonzo Ford, who we're not even 100% sure is going to be ready for the start of the season. But you'll see a theme emerging in this list, Jim. And for sure, I'm sure we'll talk about it more as spring ball goes on. We see what the spring transfer portal looks like as we get into fall 2025. My biggest concern outside the receiver group, which should be number one concern on everybody's list. It's like you can almost retire wide receiver as a concern because it's so obvious, is defensive line depth. And to me, when you look at what Penn State lost on the interior line last year when Alonzo Ford got injured, important reps and really like high production, especially on rundowns, I'm reasonably concerned what this D-line is going to look like in 2025. And to me, a veteran guy who brought so much to the table that we saw from Ford last year, if he can come back and the way the schedule is set up, you've got three very manageable non-conference games and then a bye week. I think he's got plenty of time to rest up and ease back into the rotation. But by the time Oregon comes to Happy Valley, if Alonzo Ford isn't healthy and contributing and potentially even starting on that defensive line, absent someone else stepping up or somebody coming in through the spring portal, I think there are going to be some serious concerns on that front four and in the interior in particular. And so that's why when I look at it in March, and I think about who's important to me as I'm imagining how this roster is going to pull together, Ford's up there for me.
I think that's a great pick and a great analysis of what's going on in the interior line. And what word did you use to describe the first three games, Chris?
I think I said they're very manageable.
Manageable. Okay. That's a kind way of saying that they're essentially three scrimmages.
I don't want to take Nevada too lightly. Okay. Look, I'm not saying we're going to lose to Nevada, but I don't know. Maybe it's just years and years of listening to Joe do press conferences where he talked about, I got to take Temple seriously or we're going to get licked. And it's just like, I'm programmed at this point, but give every opponent a baseline level of respect and you'll be fine.
Fair enough. I have as my number 9, Zaki Wheatley.
Mm-hmm.
Just if you watched, especially late last year, what he contributed, and to not put a safety, okay, in this top 10 most important list. And in a way, I think almost all of our picks represent the position also along with that individual player. So I had to pick one, and I'm taking Zaki Wheatley because he can change a game from that safety position. And this has become, you mentioned how the tight end room has become a machine, whereas the wide receiver position is the complete opposite.
Become a jalopy.
Safety has become a machine again also.
Yeah.
We're seeing year after year after year, Chris, and I don't know if I need to give Poindexter most of the credit. He at least deserves some of it. But they just keep producing NFL players, okay? And for this season, I'm going with Zaki Wheatley as my number 9 most important. All right, Chris. How about number 8?
Okay, so at number 8, I do have a guy you mentioned earlier, and you said, well, you don't worry about him too much. I have Nick Singleton at number 8, and this is why. This is going to be a run-powered offense. And for as vital to the functioning of Penn State's offense as Catron Allen is, I do think when you take Nick off the field, and we saw this at points in 2024, you lose that home run ability. And so I thought of these two guys. If I had to have one guy for a stretch of the season to take on more of a role and be a feature back, maybe while the other one potentially got nicked up. I think Nick just brings more a wider breadth of talents to the table than Catron does, which is to take nothing away from Catron Allen, who I love and who I've always rooted for and told people to watch out for since he arrived as a freshman. So I'm not trying to knock him by leaving him off the list here. But you look at it and you say, well, could Corey Smith, who we saw show flashes of explosivity, step in and make up for the home run ability of Nick Singleton? Maybe, but we haven't seen him take serious reps against top competition. Nick Singleton has, and really just, I mean, he showed his power, he showed his speed, he showed his vision, ability as a blocker, a receiver last year, really, as James Franklin has talked about, evolving as a complete package back. I think you got to have the run game represented on this list, and so if I'm going to pick a guy who I consider to be most critical, that's Nick.
You know, I use the Aller Singleton thing for example purposes only, for demonstration purposes only, Chris, just a little foreshadowing. Nick Singleton is on my list also, but a lot higher, okay? Just to let you know how much I value him.
The only reason I have him lower is just because I do think you have a lot of other nice talent there in the running back group.
Great point to make. All right, Chris, that is it for quarter number two. We got two more segments to go to get through the rest of our list. We're going to do that right after this message.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. This is quarter number three of our show. We are going through our top 10 most important players on the Penn State 2025 roster. Important means we're not just basing this on talent, which is obviously important to this discussion, but I think the best way, and you brought it up, how much would it hurt if we lost that player? So without further ado, we went for Chris's 10-9-8, Luke Reynolds, Alonzo Ford, and Nick Singleton. For me, in my list, I had number 10, the third linebacker, whoever that might be. I had Zakee Wheatley at number 9. And my number 8, Chris, Vega Ioane.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, he represents the offensive line.
Yeah.
Now, the offensive line, what makes it so great this coming year, and I am so anxious to watch it, is the depth that it has.
Yes.
They could withstand an injury. So because of that, you might say there's not quite as much value to a specific guy that all of a sudden, if one guy went down, that'd be an issue. But as a whole, you've got to look at the offensive line as part of this list of important players. Why did I choose Ioane to represent the group? He's a freak, Chris.
Yeah.
He's a freak.
Yeah.
No one is that big, that strong, that athletic. Plus, Chris, he's used when they do that six offensive lineman thing and they put a lineman in motion and allow him to crush somebody who is about half his size, who's a linebacker or a safety.
You just don't easily replace 6'4", 348, who moves like he does, and then that's to say nothing of the in-game experience he's accrued over the last two seasons. Yeah, getting Vega Ioane back was one of the sneaky, important offseason moves for Penn State was his decision to forego an early entry to the NFL draft.
Exactly. And I have no doubt he's an NFL lineman.
100%.
And I'll also throw in a little bit of just plain entertainment value. When I see him, you know, lined up outside and going in motion, Chris, something good is going to happen. I love seeing that. All right. We went through 10, 9, 8. How about, Chris, number 7 for you?
Yes. Yeah, so we can kind of, you know, breeze through this one, Jim, because we've already talked about Zaki Wheatley a little bit. But I have him there on my list as number 7 for a lot of the same reasons that you talked about. Ball hawking ability, the way he has improved consistently throughout his career, and you know, the pressure that will be on him now because he's going to have to take on a bigger role within the defense, number one, but probably also as a leader, as an upperclassman who has played a lot of impact football for Penn State. And because of the success that we have had over the last several seasons at the safety position, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on Zaki to, you know, to probably take another step and to play to the level of the expectations he has now. I think he's been maybe a little bit of a surprise player to a lot of fans who followed the team more casually over the last couple of years, but now he's a known commodity, and with that comes expectations. And just in terms of, again, what do you do if that player can't be on the field? Number 7, to my mind, might even be a little bit too low for him.
Good point. And we had Andy and I had this discussion because he was obviously on Andy's list also. And my take also, Chris, is at the safety position, it's not purely physical talent. There's a lot of instinct and intelligence, football IQ in playing the safety position, in my mind.
Yeah.
That I think just having more reps, more experience, I think that a cornerback in many ways is just that physical talent, that physical skill. Yes, I know experience counts at any position, but I think more so at safety than, say, at a lot of other spots. So I love that. I love the pick. I'm expecting big things from him this year. My number 7, this is a repeat of the guy that you talked about, which is Luke Reynolds, I have. And to your point, it's also a bit representative of the room. The tight end room is not going to go away. I think what you're going to see is more of what we saw in the 23 season versus the 24 season. In 24, we just had this Tyler Warren, a superstar,
there.
This, I believe this coming year, Khalil Dinkins, I think, gets overlooked quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He's going to play a lot. Luke Reynolds, and I've heard someone say, oh, you know, he made his name on that fake punt, and really anyone could have done it, or, you know, words to that effect. Well, my take on it is, no, not everyone could have done it. But number 2, and perhaps more importantly, this was the coaching staff saying, we trust this guy in what may be, in hindsight, the biggest play of the regular season for this Penn State team.
Yeah.
Okay. And they trusted a true freshman with the ball in his hands, Chris. That, to me, should tell you a whole lot about what this coaching staff thinks of him. So I'm anxious. I'm also anxious. I feel contractually obligated to mention Andrew Rappelier, who I think got forgotten because he was out for the year with injury. And if he's healthy, and oh, by the way, there's this pretty good freshman by the name of Olish who, you know, might be good enough to get on the field, but might be in a position where there's just too much depth for him to get there.
I think they're going to find ways to play Andrew Olish, no question. And don't forget Joey Schlaffer, too. I mean, again, I'm not even 100% sure all of those guys are still going to be on the roster come kickoff. Maybe one who gets lost in the mix, jumps in the transfer portal after the spring. I think there's probably a high degree of likelihood of that, frankly. But yeah, your point is well taken. The tight end spot has become really important in this offense. And until we get resolution at the receiver spot, it's all the more important.
And Chris, what we have found over the years at that position is guys aren't leaving. It's because they're getting the chance to get on the field where we're seeing 2 and 3 tight ends on the field at the same time. And there's just this pecking order. Who's next in line, Chris? And that's the way it works. I love the tight end position. Absolutely love it. I love its past. I love its present. I love its future. All right. Number six on your list.
Okay. Linebacker you, Jim. I got Tony Rojas in here at number six, because when I think about unsettled positions on the field, we already talked about the need to replace Kobe King. And you've got playmaking ability, steady leadership from Dom DeLuca. But Dom is also not a player who's going to be on the field for every snap. I think when you're talking about volume of snaps played, you factor in ability, and then you consider expectations for the player, especially coming back healthy. To me, Tony Rojas is the total package there. He's the obvious choice of who is the most important, which is what we're talking about. Who's the most important linebacker for Penn State this year? No question, it's Tony.
And Chris, I know there were times last year, he's that high ceiling, low floor guy, play to play.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like he misses an assignment or misses a tackle, and then he makes a special play. So I get it. I think that's a great pick.
And you need to add the qualifier. He played through most of last season limited and in discomfort because he had a shoulder issue going on. I think that's pretty widely acknowledged now. And so to me, again, just being able to have this offseason to heal up and to be more of the player that he looks like when he played at his best last season, I think that's going to be really important for Penn State this and coming year.
I also think my discussion about safeties and experience and reps could also be a discussion about the linebacker position also.
Sure. So, there does seem to be this disease among college football fans that even though they watch the sport their entire lives and they practically understand that these are 18 to 22-year-olds who get better quite frequently from year to year with maturation and with additional offseason and learning and being able to process what they did the previous year and apply it to the next. People just have in their heads that, no, like whatever I saw most recently, that's it. It's fixed. It's set in stone. And that's all you are as a player. This is every offseason. And so that's a lot of the criticism we're seeing of Rojas, where he comes in, people are excited about him as a freshman. They get angry about what he does as a sophomore. And then that's it. That's who he is as a player for the rest of his life.
Well, and I to make your point, Abdul Carter, early in the season as defensive end.
Get him out of there. Get him back to linebacker. He stinks. The failed experiment.
By the end of the season, he might be the best player in the country. All right. my number six, Tyron Hudson, wide receiver, transfer from USC.
Yeah.
And this might be, you know, like Andy, we need a receiver. I decided to put a name out there. And Chris, I'm like your typical fan. I see a play, good or bad, and I overreact to it. Yes, I am still reacting to the play that he made for USC against LSU. Go look it up, okay? That's not a human being who makes that kind of play. That's a freak, Chris, who makes that kind of play. And I swear to God, Chris, I watched the play live. I saw and said, boy, I wish Penn State had a receiver like that.
Yeah,
but you know what? I got my wish.
Significant impact on this year's offense. You know, you can look at Pat Kraft's comments in his most recent press availability. I don't know that Penn State's done at the receiver spot. I spoiler alert, I don't have any wide receivers on my list, Jim. None. And kind of speaking to my point about we can just sort of retire wide receiver because it's obviously the biggest concern. But you asked me to rank my 10 most important players. And I said my thinking was, who are we in real trouble if this guy gets hurt? And so far, based on what we actually know about any of these wide receivers, I can't classify any of them as a big loss if they get hurt because they don't do anything. They contribute nothing. So it's like, how can I argue that any one individual is important? Because as far as I know, they're all the exact opposite. So it's the most important position. And as far as we know, nobody in the entire room is important because we haven't seen them do anything of consequence.
Yep, that's the valid argument. I'm looking at it as perhaps the glass half full. I'm hopeful that somebody, somebody has to be the tallest midget in the circus. Somebody's got to be able to step up and be the number one. I'm hoping it's Hudson. Like I said, I still have this dream of that catch that he made against LSU. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number three. We got to get through your top five when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I am Jim Galante. We are going through Chris and my countdown of the 10 most important players on the Penn State roster. Looking at Chris's list real quick, starting from number 10, working our way down, Luke Reynolds, Alonzo Ford, Nick Singleton, Zaki Wheatley, Tony Rojas at number 6. Chris, who's number 5?
One of my favorite players on the defense. And I know we got to get through five players in one segment here. I will tell you, at the top of the list, I mean, these guys are pretty obvious and well-known commodities. I'm sure you can guess who number 1 is. But at number 5, I have cornerback A.J. Harris. And to me, AJ was, for the most part, everything I expected and hoped he would be last season. And the chance that he has now to build on a very solid 2024 and emerge as the true number one corner, probably one of the best players at his position in the conference, and a leader on this defense for Jim Knowles, I'm excited about. And so I think just in terms of what I think his contributions as a lockdown corner and as a playmaker could be for Penn State in 2025, make him a very important player. But then when I also think about the trickle-down effect of not having him on the field, again, going back to that standard of if a guy gets nicked up and he has to miss some games, how does that affect the overall team? I think he's one of the most important players for Penn State this season.
Okay, you have as your number 5, A.J. Harris. Wax poetic about him. Chris, for me, number 5, ditto. I have A.J. Harris there at number 5, and everything you said. The only thing I will add is also the value of a shutdown cornerback.
Yep.
Have one. So important in the college game these days, especially when an Ohio State shows up. You want a shutdown corner. Actually,
they say great minds think alike, Jim, but clearly so do we.
Obviously. Excellent point, Chris. Excellent point. All right. Who's your number 4?
Oh, you're going to love this one, Jim. I know it. My number 4 is Cooper Cousins.
Ooh. And
to go back to what you said about Venga Iwane kind of being a stand-in for the entire offensive line, to some extent, Cooper really speaks to both the ability and the depth on Penn State's offensive line in general, which is such a nice luxury. Like, the MVP of this entire staff might be Phil Troutwine. Will Fries, Jim. Will Fries just signed an $88 million NFL contract. If you go back to what that young man was doing through the majority of his Penn State career, if I would have told you that he was going to be a draft pick, let alone that he was going to sign multiple NFL contracts, you probably would have laughed in my face. So I said after Phil Troutwine's 1 year that his sales pitch when he goes out on the recruiting trail should be, I made Will Fries an NFL draft pick. I said, you should just print out the Adam Schefter tweet. Will Fries has signed an $88 million contract to the Minnesota Vikings. Put it on a T-shirt and have Troutwine wear that when he walks into offensive line recruits' homes. And Cooper Cousins, the sophomore, the phenom, you heard coaches and players praise him in the preseason. You saw him contribute significantly on the field last year as a true freshman. And he's somebody who you believe will ultimately inherit the center job from Nick Dawkins, but who I think is almost certainly going to be the starter at right guard. So ability, leadership, flexibility to play multiple positions on that line. The O-line is going to be so critical to this year's team. And if I think about one guy, when I package all that up, who is going to speak to who's like least replaceable or most valuable, Ioane might be the guy, but I because he can play the two spots and because he represents the present and the future, I'm going with Cooper Cousins. And again, that's just, I don't have to mention either one of the offensive tackles, Jim, because we have depth at that spot. So really, Penn State is in an enviable position with its O-line this year.
I couldn't agree more. And I had, in my mind, I had to pick a offensive line, sure, one. And if I had to pick a second one, it would have been Cooper Cousins. As someone who represents what the line, he has versatility to play guard or center. He's a young player. He represents how good the recruiting has been. You know what? Maybe we should have just named Troutwine. Okay. Yeah, you've been right. A better way to represent that.
I got him at number four, Jim, because nothing is more important than the trenches. And he doesn't need to be any higher. Offensive line doesn't need to be any higher because Penn State has done a great job recruiting and developing at the spot.
And, you know, I think oftentimes in the college game, we want an offensive line that doesn't hurt you, that doesn't make the mistakes. This is an offensive line with such a high side. They're going to win games for you. All right, my number four, as promised, Chris, Nick Singleton. I said I was going to have him higher up. And the fact is, you win national championships, Chris, with stars,
yeah,
with home run hitters. Yes, it's a whole lot easier with a great offensive line. Catron Allen, tremendous player. The way he was playing at the end of the year, he was playing like an All-American. But Nick Singleton is your home run hitter. He changes the game in one at-bat, Chris, okay? That's why I have Nick Singleton number four. All right, Chris, let's get to your number three.
I'm actually going to package together number three and number two because I said nothing's more important than the trenches, and I'm sticking there. At number three, I've got Zane Durant, and at number two, I've got Danai Dennis Sutton. And this just goes back to my concern about the defensive line. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be a liability. It could end up, by the time we get to August, a group I talk about as a strength. But I look across the roster, and I think about a team that's going to be expected to contend for a national championship, which will be the expectation of Penn State. We're going to be a preseason top five team, Jim. And so I look for where are the question marks, and that's depth on the interior, and where is your pass rush going to come from? And Zane Durant and Danai Dennis Sutton coming back to this team are two of the biggest reasons that we are going to have the expectations I just talked about. And when I go back to this standard of who can we least afford to lose, I think it's pretty clear those guys are in my top three.
You know what, Chris? Earlier when at number five, you had A.J. Harris, I had A.J. Harris. You made reference to how great minds think alike, and so do ours. You want to know who my number three and my number two are?
Zane Durant and Danai Dennis Sutton.
No, Danai Dennis Sutton and Zane Durant.
Okay, fair.
Three and two. Go ahead.
I thought about who belongs where. And you can make a good argument for Durant. Ultimately, I just thought about Dennis Sutton has another gear he can get to and is going to have to get to without Abdul Carter. And success in football now at the pro and college level is about getting to the quarterback. And both these guys can do that. But it's ultimately more critical to be able to come off the edge and create that disruption and pressure. And so that's why I had Dennis Sutton at number two.
And it's interesting, and I valid point that you make, Chris. And with Danai Dennis Sutton, we all knew really good player. And sometimes this is me being the typical fanboy, watching the most recent memory. Deny Dennis Sutton in the playoff game against Notre Dame, dropping back into coverage and making that athletic interception. Chris, that was ridiculous, okay?
Unbelievable play. Totally wasted, which is what we're going to talk about when we get to number one, I'm sure.
Right. Just a ridiculous play that just tells me, yes, he's got that next level to him, Chris, that something really special. I have Zane Durant number two over him only because I'm scared of that lack of depth at defensive tackle. And Zane Durant is a special player, which we seem to have never had at Penn State at tackle, or at least for the last decade. And he, I feel like, is that guy. Him coming back was so important. Really, Chris, you know, it should have been two and 2A, but I like the way you thought on those. I'm glad you put them both in there together. Made me do the same thing, which leaves us, Chris, with our number one player. And I'm sure we have the same guy in there. It's Smith Vilbert for both of us.
Absolutely. That is correct. I mean, of course, Jim, it's clear cut and obvious this year. Although I will say, by the way, Smith Vilbert jumping in the transfer portal is like a sneaky little liability for this team. And it goes back to my concerns about the defensive line. We can talk about that another day. But everyone knows who's number one. It's so obviously the most important player for 2025 for Penn State. Now, I'm going to mangle this story a little bit, but the essence is correct. I was told a story by a buddy of mine. Shout out Matt Ralston. Back in the 70s, the Steelers had just lost, I think, a playoff game to the Raiders at some point. And there was this quote from Jack Lambert that he said something like, give me 15 minutes, one six-pack, and we'll go back out there and we'll play him again. And to me, that speaks to the attitude you have to have as a competitor, that all you want is an opportunity. No matter how bad the last thing that happened was, you just want one more opportunity. And that's what Drew Aller has. And so the question is, which, you know, the old meme of the two wolves inside you, which one of the two wolves inside Drew Aller is going to win out? Is it going to be the lousy 2023 body language and big game underperformance that we saw, and god-awful interception throwing Drew Aller that we saw? Or is it going to be the guy who cussed out the ref at West Virginia, or the guy who got caught on camera, MF and those Illinois defenders as he ran to the sidelines? He has both, and he has the blessing of an opportunity now to have one more rodeo to let the wolf we are all hoping wins out win the day. And so that's the question. It doesn't matter what you did. It matters what you're going to do, and which Drew Aller are we going to get in 2025. That's why he's number one.
Obviously number one on my list also. And Chris, I think the great thing in sports is you can make that mistake and you have the ability to rehab your reputation, everything. He's going to get that early in the season. Oregon, first conference game. Right there, he has a chance to make up for it. All right, Chris, that's it. That's our top 10 list. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.